Chapter 29. Interfere with your wishes. She looked as if she were shivering, and her lips were pale. You are very attractive, Miss Harleth. But when he first knew me, I too was young. Since then my life has been broken up and embittered. It is not fair that he should be happy and I miserable, and my boy thrust out of sight for another. These words were uttered with a biting accent, but with a determined abstinence from anything violent in tone or manner. Gwendolyn, watching Mrs. Glasher's face while she spoke, felt a sort of terror. It was as if some ghastly vision had come to her in a dream and said, I am a woman's life. Have you anything more to say to me? She asked in a low tone, but still proud and coldly. The revulsion within her was not tending to soften her. Everyone seemed hateful. Nothing. You know what I wish you to know. You can inquire about me if you like. My husband was Colonel Glasher. Then I will go, said Gwendolyn, moving away with a ceremonious inclination, which was returned with equal grace. In a few minutes Gwendolyn was in the beech grove again, but her party had gone out of sight, and apparently had not sent in search of her, for all was solitude till as he had reached the avenue pointed out by the warden. She determined to take this way back to Green Arbor, which she reached quickly, rapid movements seeming to her just now a means of suspending the thoughts which might prevent her from behaving with due calm. As he had already made up her mind, what step she would take. Mrs. Davilow was of course astonished to see Gwendolyn returning alone, and was not without some uneasiness which the presence of other ladies hindered her from showing. In answer to her words of surprise Gwendolyn said, Oh, I have been rather silly. I lingered behind to look at the Whispering Stones, and the rest hurried on after something, so I lost sight of them. I thought it best to come home by the short way the avenue that the warden had told me of. I'm not sorry after all. I had had enough walking. Your party did not meet Mr. Grandcourt, I presume, said Mrs. Arrowpoint, not without intention. No, said Gwendolyn, with a little flash of defiance, and a light laugh. And we didn't see any carvings on the trees either. Where can he be? I should think he has fallen into the pool, or had an apoplectic fit. With all Gwendolyn's resolve, not to betray any agitation, she could not help it, that her tone was unusually high and hard, and her mother felt sure that something unpropitious had happened. Mrs. Arrowpoint thought that the self-confident young lady was much piqued, and that Mr. Grandcourt was probably seeing reason to change his mind. If you have no objection, Mama, I will order the carriage, said Gwendolyn. I am tired. And everyone will be going soon. Mrs. Davilow assented. But by the time the carriage was announced as ready, the horses having to be fetched from the stables on the warden's premises, the roving party reappeared, and with them Mr. Grandcourt. Ah, there you are, said Lord Brackenshaw, going up to Gwendolyn, who was arranging her mama's shawl for the drive. We thought at first you had alighted on Grandcourt and he had taken you home. Lush said so. But after that we met Grandcourt. However, we didn't suppose you could be in any danger. The warden said he had told you a near way back. You are going? Said Grandcourt, coming up with his usual air, as if he did not conceive that there had been any omission on his part. Lord Brackenshaw gave place to him and moved away. Yes, we are going, said Gwendolyn, looking busily at her scarf, which she was arranging across her shoulders Scotch fashion. May I call a defendant tomorrow? Oh yes, if you like, said Gwendolyn, sweeping him from a distance with her eyelashes. Her voice was light and sharp as the first touch of frost. Mrs. Davilow accepted his arm to lead her to the carriage. But while that was happening, Gwendolyn with incredible swiftness had got in advance of them and had sprung into the carriage. I got in, Mama, because I wished to be on this side, she said, apologetically. But as he had avoided Grandcourt's touch, he only lifted his hat and walked away with the not unsatisfactory impression that she meant to show herself offended by his neglect. The mother and daughter drove for 5 minutes in silence. Then Gwendolyn said, I intend to join the Langens at Dover, Mama. I shall pack up immediately on getting home, and set off by the early train. I shall be at Dover, almost as soon as they are. We can let them know by telegraph. Good heavens, child. What can be your reason for saying so?
My reason for saying it, Mama, is that I mean to do it.
But why do you mean to do it?
I wish to go away.
Is it because you are offended with Mr. Grandcourt's odd behavior in walking off today?
It is useless to enter into such questions.
I am not going in any case to marry Mr. Grandcourt.
Don't interest yourself further about it.
What can I say to your uncle, Gwendolyn?
Consider the position you place me in.
You led him to believe only last night that you had made up your mind in favor of Mr. Grandcourt.
I am very sorry to cause you annoyance, Mama, dear, but I can't help it, said Gwendolyn, with still harder resistance in her tone.
Whatever you or my uncle may think or do, I shall not alter my resolve, and I shall not tell my reason.
I don't care what comes of it.
I don't care if I never marry anyone. There is nothing worth caring for. I believe all men are bad, and I hate them.
But need you set off in this way, Gwendolyn, said Mrs. Davilow, miserable and helpless.
Now, Mama, don't interfere with me. If you have ever had any trouble in your own life, remember it and don't interfere with me.
If I am to be miserable, let it be by my own choice.
The mother was reduced to trembling silence. She began to see that the difficulty would be lessened if Gwendolyn went away. And she did go. The packing was all carefully done that evening, and not long after dawn the next day Mrs. Davilow accompanied her daughter to the railway station. The sweet dews of morning, the cows and horses looking over the hedges without any particular reason, the early travelers on foot with their bundles, seemed all very melancholy and purposeless to them both. The dingy torpor of the railway station, before the ticket could be taken, was still worse. Gwendolyn had certainly hardened in the last 24 hours. Her mother's trouble evidently counted for little in her present state of mind, which did not essentially differ from the mood that makes men take to worse conduct when their belief in persons or things is upset. Gwendolyn's uncontrolled reading, though consisting chiefly in what are called pictures of life, had somehow not prepared her for this encounter with reality. Is that surprising? It is to be believed that attendance at the Opera Bouffe in the present day would not leave men's minds entirely without shock if the manners observed there with some applause were suddenly to start up in their own families. Perspective, as its inventor remarked, is a beautiful thing. What horrors of damp huts, where human beings languish, may not become picturesque through aerial distance. What hymning of cancerous vices may we not languish over as sublimest art in the safe remoteness of a strange language and artificial phrase? Yet we keep a repugnance to rheumatism and other painful effects when presented in her personal experience. Mrs. Davilow felt Gwendolyn's new phase of indifference keenly, and as she drove back alone, the brightening morning was sadder to her than before. Mr. Grandcourt called that day at Offenden, but nobody was at home. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.